welcome to the Fans Are On podcast, take two. Hi, what were we talking about?
You were telling me about bone... Bones.
VR.
Boneworks.
Yeah. Bones, the new VR experience with Zooey Deschanel's cousin. Sister.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Did not know that.
I didn't know that either. By the way, I'm streaming this.
On Discord?
Yeah.
Or on Twitch?
Twitch.
Oh, God, that's weird. Does that mean if I go to my Twitch?
You should be able to see us.
It'll pop up there automatically?
Maybe. Are you auto-streaming me again?
It's some sort of, like, family group thing I thought I had going, but maybe not. I don't recall.
Neither do I.
Actually, I'm not gonna go and check because since I have like an older CPU chip,
mm-hmm. It'll break everything.
It doesn't multitask extremely well when it's different applications. If it's one application, it makes do perfectly fine. But yeah, I'm not going to open up anything crazy on my browser. So if we're streaming, hello,
hey.
Cookie, you'll have to relay us with any questions that come up from the stream.
Will do. I didn't tell anyone we were going to be streaming, so, you know.
Hey, I just set up my Streamlabs so it automatically makes a tweet now whenever I go live. So
that's pretty cool.
I'm moving up in the world.
But yeah, what were you talking about? Oh, just random things in general.
We were talking about Boneworks.
Yeah, so video games that I've just been itching to talk about, Boneworks VR. I've played all of 10 minutes of it. I no longer have my VR legs for like fully immersive VR gameplay, so it made me a little nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, my goodness, it is nifty and cool from what I've played, and it makes me excited for Half-Life Alyx when that comes out. But the reason I want to talk about Boneworks is because I got a fancy new cable that finally came in the mail that was $79.99.
You mean one to hook up your Oculus Quest to your computer?
That is the very one.
It requires a different cable. It's not just a USB 3?
It's a USB 3.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's a USB 3. I think it just requires a minimum of 3.0 or 3.1. USB-C cable, but it's got to be like a certain quality of USB-C cable.
Okay.
So like we've got a bunch of USB-C cables in my house, and one worked for all of 5 minutes before it no longer worked ever again. It still works as just like a normal charging cable. But the other cables, all my other cables just didn't even attempt to work. I installed the new part a few weeks ago. So that way I've got a USB-C port in my computer now. So plugged it into my Oculus Quest, and it was just like, hey, you're running, do you want to do this whole Oculus Link thing? And I was like, yes. And I was like, cool. And then I was like, excellent. You have never used the Oculus Store before on your computer except for one time. All these applications that you have need to be updated. And I was like, yay. Spent two days of troubleshooting that because Asgard's Wrath, for whatever reason, wouldn't download. And that's a pretty ass game.
Mm.
Not much to say.
It has been downloaded now, though?
Yes. I got to play about 20 minutes of that. That's a pretty ass game. No comments on it as of right now yet. I'll definitely be talking about that more in a couple of weeks, but I remembered that I had some issues with Steam VR for whatever reason, because I swapped Steam from my C drive to my E drive, so just to a different thing, and it had issues of like pulling things up and routing, so I had to completely uninstall Steam from my computer last night, reinstall Steam, just a fresh new install, uninstalled all the games, so just installed Boneworks VR, decided Lizzie hasn't played Doki Doki Literature Club, so she's going to have to do that.
Crazy, because I just was talking to people about Doki Doki Literature Club recently, too.
I didn't know it was having a resurgence.
It apparently is, because I was just like looking through the thing. I was like, okay, game's the one I want to download. Oh. Called out to Lisa. I was like, have you ever played this? And she's like, it sounds familiar. It's like, yeah, you haven't played this.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have you stream this.
Has she started playing it?
Not yet.
Okay. I'm going to say this isn't worth making a point to putting it on the timeline, so to speak. But the reason why it's become, it's resurged in some way is because the creator, Salvato, Team Salvato or whatever, is going mm-hmm. to be adding more content to the game.
Oh.
I didn't even know that. It was just kind of on the list of non-VR games that I actually wanted to experience or have someone else experience. Ooh. I need to get my brother to download that.
Yeah, I wonder what's left to add. Just more like pleading. Please don't turn off the game. Don't leave me here all alone.
Spoilers.
I think it would be really interesting. If she streams it, you have to give me a heads up on when that happens so I can jump on too.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, most definitely. I'll make a big show out of it.
Maybe it'd be cool to have her on to talk about it, because the more distance I've given that game, the more my criticisms have mounted for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be curious to see like what a fresh perspective on that game is like in contrast to my like kind of edgy takes. Not edgy, maybe more like, I'm not going to get into it, but.
Okay.
I can dig it. Well, we'll have to see what she thinks. I forgot to rename the stream. It's currently called Let's Be Pirates.
We're pirating the Fancy Ramen podcast, so.
Yeah. This is a mutiny.
But what was it doing? But to talk about like just random things as of right now, you had a question about whether or not we wanted to do Game of the Year talks.
I mean, I thought by talking about weekly topics, we had established
made
we would
decision.
Do it afterwards. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
So what else have you been up to?
This week, prepping for PAX next week. So excited about that. I'm going to need... Do you have like a little Zoom recorder, Neil?
Yeah, I think I have one somewhere. I'll try and find it.
I lost mine. So if we want any kind of content or any like recordings or anything, I definitely might have to get with you before Thursday.
I mean, that is your call entirely. I would prefer you enjoy PAX to the best of your extent.
Hey, walking around with a microphone and saying, hey, I work for a podcast, actually lets me talk to like developers and shit about things.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of gets me behind the scenes just a little bit.
And then there'll be like 10 people listen to this podcast.
Yep.
Three of which are on the show. Four of which were on the show at one point.
Two of which are on the show. Lord knows I don't listen to myself. But decided to re-up on some old video games. So I just started booting back up for Persona 5. And I was playing something else.
You can't wait for the Royal to come out?
I'm not going to pay for the Royal. And I forgot what other game I've been playing. But it's been a pretty low-key week. Just working, living life. What have you guys been up to?
I've been contemplating playing Persona 5 again.
Also not going to wait for the Royal?
Well, there's a problem with starting a fresh new game on P5R. I'm going to buy it when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I will likely play it as soon as it comes out, because there is a difference between buying and playing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with P5R would be that I will be back at zero stats.
That's right.
And one of the nice things about the second playthrough of any of these games is having your max stats, so you don't have to worry about maxing out social links.
Mm-hmm.
Because like more than half of your schedule is geared towards stat acquisition in Persona 5. Maybe like a third in Persona 5.
But it's definitely like, between that. Yeah, it's over the 33%, under the 50, and half of that is so you can get those social links. So I get what you're saying.
And Persona 4 especially has a lot of good scenes that you can just miss out on by focusing on your studies and getting your 100% playthrough, which I don't think is necessarily the intended design of the team. But quite frankly, I think these games would play better if the requirements were much lower for each of the stats, either the growth of the stats or that there were only 3 levels as opposed to 5. But Persona 4 in particular, I've always really enjoyed like the second sequential playthroughs from there, because you have all of your stats maxed, you can hang out with who you want at your convenience, and then whenever people invite you... Well, I mean, yeah. Whenever people... Well, so that's the funny thing. In 4, you actually get a lot of study events that if you don't know why people are inviting you out, or if you're not reading, like you might just think, well, someone's inviting me out. But most of the time when people invite me out, it's a bad idea because I might already have them geared up for the next social link. So if I hang out with somebody, it's a wasted, you know, period of the day, right?
Right.
But Persona 4 has a few events that a few of those optional events are actually pretty fun. And you also have some study sessions and such that, like, you might not gain as much intelligence off of those sessions as you would if you did whatever the optimum studying thing in that game was. I don't remember. It might have been studying by yourself in the library.
In the rain? Oh.
Yeah, I think the rain helped with it too, though. Or, wait, no, that doesn't 5. I don't know if it did in 4.
Okay.
But, I still haven't gotten through Persona 5 on a second playthrough yet, when, you know, I can just do whatever I want. I didn't really get to do the batting cages that much. We'll get back to batting cages in a second.
Ooh, foreshadow.
I didn't really do anything. Like, there were a couple cool scenes I saw at the indoor fishing. It might not have been indoor, but the fishing pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really curious who else you can run into there. So... yeah, I'm going to play P5R, but I still need to play through the base game and, you know, do everything I could have done, like read the books, play the games and all the stuff, all of the cutscenes or like hangouts that I declined because I was trying to maximize my my like completionist social link run, confidant run, rather.
Mm-hmm.
But as I alluded to, batting cages have been a thing. A pastime I've partaken in another game called Judgment. That is the Yakuza spinoff title, where you play as a disgraced lawyer turned private eye. This disgraced lawyer also has like a Yakuza upbringing. The short story, so to speak, leading up to the game is that as a kid, I think you might have been an orphan or something, but basically a smaller Yakuza subsidiary of the Tojo clan, which is like the main family in the Yakuza games, raises you from, you know, as a child up to like your high school and college days. And your character, despite being, you know, like a beat 'em up thug, takes a bunch of night classes and ends up passing the bar. So as like this new, entirely self-motivated lawyer, early in his career, he ends up getting... a person who's convicted of murder off, which is apparently big news in Japan because the conviction rate is like 99.9% or something crazy.
I don't think that far off. I'm pretty sure it's in the upper 90%.
And so immediately, or maybe not immediately, but like weeks, it seems like, after he gets that person off,
He
is convicted of killing his girlfriend and then setting his apartment on fire. So it sounds like you guys might be a little familiar with the game.
Well, I've seen some clips on it.
Oh, like the trailers or the teasers that show like the first bits of gameplay? Because, yeah, I've more or less described like the first 10 minutes of the game.
Also some buggy messes.
What's up?
Just some like glitches in the game.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this game is a little... there are a few glitches here and there, but like none of them are so game breaking that they more like it adds to the charm. But this, I haven't played the Yakuza series beyond Yakuza 0, and I've seen gameplay from 1 through 4, so I can't speak of the latest ones and if they share the same qualities. But I would say this game has like really momentum-driven fluid combat that feels maybe the best out of the entire series. It's really simplified. You only have two stances to begin with, at least. The drawback is that with that momentum and that like degree of control and like it feels like power, if you want to think of it that way. Because the game is more open world, your movement in combat and out of combat is more or less tied together. So your character kind of moves like Geralt in The Witcher 3. Geralt? Is it a Geralt? Soft or hard? Geralt?
Geralt. Yeah. Geralt. You just had the emphasis wrong, that's all.
Geralt.
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 Geralt. Geralt. Geralt.
So you're like Geralt from The Witcher 3.
Yeah, exactly. Jared from The Witcher 3. The Witcher 3. So much that it... I mean, like, you get used to it, but when you just start out playing the game, it's kind of funny because you're just running into people accidentally on the street constantly.
Oh, who's to say that's not realistic?
And a couple times I would go into shops or like ramen bars or whatever and proceed to knock over too many chairs and tables so they wouldn't serve me afterwards.
And well, that's what you get for walking into a store and being an asshole.
I mean, I kind of like that they have that figured out as well. They know that if you go in and cause too much of a ruckus, well, you're not going to be allowed to sit down and eat here. But we also made it so it felt like you're tripping over your own 2 feet every time you move forward.
But I do want to note some of the positives. I'm obviously still pretty early in the game. The first one is that while the minigames don't seem as plentiful so far, but maybe that's because I'm not far enough, they do have drone racing, which is pretty interesting, and you can customize your drone and stuff. And because it takes place in 2018, you know, maybe that makes more sense than motorized cars, like, you know, derby cars or whatever you want to call them.
RC cars?
No, the derby races, they're like on a set track.
Okay.
And you're kind of just controlling their speed. It's really cool to watch.
Yeah, it is.
I know what you're talking about. If you over-accelerate through the turns, they fly out of the track.
Yep.
So it's all about like perfecting that exact velocity you need.
Yakuza 0 was also really good in the regard of making it ridiculous. Like, it kind of felt like your derby racing was pulled out of a derby racing anime. Like, nice. He got really dramatic and he would like slam the car into the camera, showing it in a JoJo-esque pose. Like, very, very over the top, very rewarding. This game doesn't necessarily have the same level of flamboyance and outgoingness, but I will say, on the flip side, the batting cage mini game is probably the best batting game I've ever had before, or I've ever played before. And that is, you know, being a few years removed from any MLB title or anything like that. But the idea is actually really cool. And it makes sense even from like a 1v1 or like player versus player standpoint too. You get your batting cage grid and you have essentially, it's divided into 9 squares, just like most batting cage diagrams are, or batting zones, batters, strike zones, so to speak. And you see where the pitch is first going to is first like projected at, but through the pitch, it will move, you know, for things like sliders and cutters and so forth. And
right.
The way to determine how close the pitch is to your strike zone, so to speak, as in like how close it is for distance wise, is that an outer circle around the pitch then minimizes to the size of the ball on the strike zone diagram. And so once that has reached the ball's size, that's when it is in your strike zone and, you know, possibly leaving it if you don't hit it.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes it so good is because that the speed of the pitch obviously can change. So you have to keep your eye on the pitch's speed based off of the diagram or the ball's outer ring.
Right, the faster the ring shrinks, the faster the pitch.
Exactly. And you also have to keep your eye on the ball's trajectory, too. And your bat is more of a, more or less like your zone of your bat is basically represented by a smaller circle, not smaller than the ball, but like an area, if you will, that you then have to direct and aim over the ball as it's being, you know, pitched. So
nice.
It's cool because you have to react to distance or distance speed, rather, and location of the ball. And it just is a really rewarding mechanic. I don't think I've ever seen it done this well in like MLB 2K before. Again, saving for the last few years that I haven't played. But it really does feel like you could have some awesome battles between like a human pitcher with this system. Like, it's crazy. It's literally better than any baseball game I've played as of late. So, or within like the last 10 years. So kudos to the game for that. And maybe it's actually a new mechanic that games are using now, and they just stripped it from that too, because that could be a thing. But aside from that, the game does have a lot more of more interesting takes because, you know, as a detective, as opposed to just some bruiser in a clan, you do have to go and investigate crime scenes. You have to gather evidence, talk to witnesses, all that sort of stuff. It's not really as prevalent as I think some people were making it out to be. Like, I heard the comparison of This Is Yakuza with Ace Attorney. Nowhere near that. You still end up beating up people for most of your problem solving.
Nice.
And the court case is entirely done by another lawyer, as far as I can tell.
It's Law and Order.
Exactly. You're the cop side, except you're technically a detective because the cops are all imbeciles.
As they should be, as they are in real life. I only trust private eyes and gung-ho people that are about to retire in 2 days.
Devil may care cops. Devil may cry cops. They'll throw a motorcycle at you.
Oh, that is one of the nice things about this game. Maybe they introduced it in the later Yakuza's as well. But the enemies don't just ignore weapons and other things on the ground. Like, if there's a bicycle by them, they will proceed to kick the bicycle at your character. So you do have to kind of be mindful about those things. Whereas in other games, it felt like those objects were just like, well, I win the fight automatically.
They're there for you.
Yeah.
So does it have good physics? Like, when the bike's getting kicked at you, it feels pretty physically consistent, or are we talking like balloon animal weight bike just gets straight up launched at your face?
Okay, this will answer your question. I'm going to describe a special attack where your character will throw an object like a couch up into the air,
and
then he
jumps
up and then kicks the couch towards the enemy.
Oh god, okay. Who's the guy who fights Isaiah in Da-da-da-da?
I can't remember his name. The bartender, the one who has an in-lore explanation for why he's so strong, and it's that he just like has broken so many bones and can't feel pain while he's raging.
Yes.
I do not remember his name, but yeah, the berserker bartender. He's a delightful character.
Shuzuo was his name. So basically, your character is Shuzuo.
Yeah. We're just not getting the like Mortal Kombat X X-ray screens, seeing his like fingers snap as he grips this couch with his full fledged adrenaline strength.
But you are getting that level of violence, except everybody's still alive.
Good.
It's somewhat comical. At one point, someone pulls a gun on your main character.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
And obviously, you know, in the Yakuza universe, the gun is like the most deadly thing, except for the fact that if you have a gun in Yakuza 0, you can shoot people 20 times and they can still be alive. But in cutscenes, guns amazingly strong.
It's a one-shot kill, right?
But they present the gun only after beating him up for what might have been like 30 minutes with bats and other items, where it's like, yeah, no, we're fine when that happens. You're fine if you get kicked out of a second floor building and fall to the ground. You're okay. But that gun?
That bullet's going to kill you, yeah.
Every time.
And so you're holding your couch and you're saying, did I throw 4 cushions or 5?
But yeah, not like a game of the year or anything like that. Game of the year contender.
But a romp.
But definitely really fun. I'm enjoying it a lot. And then the last thing I can really talk, I really feel the need to talk about is Disco Elysium. I finished that bad boy.
Was it as disco as you expected?
Did you finish it, Scott?
I have not finished it. I think I'm like on the, I'm just on the precipice of completing it. I have encountered a cryptid, and on the moment had me like, it was an emotionally charged moment to find the cryptid that I thought might exist. So I don't know if that's a good indicator of where I'm at on the time scale or not, because I don't know if you found it.
Yeah, I found the cryptid. Okay. It's you should really just complete it. You're really close.
I'm like
to the
right
end.
There is what I think. Yeah, I mean, my notebook has almost all of my stuff crossed out. The only reason I didn't get it done last night is I was playing tennis early in the morning today, so I had to get to bed. Yeah, but it was one of those things that, had it been any other circumstances, I would have not wanted to stop playing the game at that moment. I found a plethora of evidence for my case, and I feel like I'm, you know, really just waiting to kind of call some stuff in and wrap it up with a nice tight bow before everything gets called into question and the game ends.
Yeah, my first thought seeing the cryptid, like spoilers, obviously, I'll mark it down in the notes too.
Cryptids exist.
And there's no way that cryptid could ever get trapped by that small ass net device.
Yeah. It's fantastic, really. I was so excited and happy that they actually committed to the cryptid being a real thing in the game, like adding just to the sort of mystery and the mythos of the environment that we're in, of the, you know, Insolidian archipelago. Super, super cool. And the music that they used for it too was very, very good.
There's only one big point I can't talk about because it would be a spoiler, but there are a few small, and I'm not sure necessarily if I want to get that far into the game because of it, or get that far into discussing because of it. But did you ever think that maybe the two cryptologists, is that what they were calling them?
Cryptozoologists.
That maybe they'd probably, or maybe they had discovered the cryptid, but just don't remember it now.
I mean, they could have, but I haven't encountered any memory. I guess the last memory erasing that's happened to me is getting like blackout drunk. So unless they got blitzed on the beachfront, there's.
So you talked to the cryptid and did all that, but you didn't. You like saved and quit right after that, right?
Yeah, I like didn't leave the area even.
So all I will say is that there's.
It's okay. You've already shown your hand. It's it's fine at this point. I think I have an idea.
So the guy, like, I don't know if you tried licking the cryptid or anything. Like, there
was
some option.
I didn't know that there was a lick the cryptid option.
There's always a lick the cryptid option.
And you can't tell me there's always a lick the cryptid option.
I don't know. Every time
would be very unpleasant to lick.
Well, you gotta, if you don't know what it tastes like, how are you truly going to know anything about it?
You can surmise through your conversation with them, if apparently you have the right checks, that it might be emitting something. And then there's a reason that the soldier does not see the cryptid at all.
Interesting. Okay. I haven't followed through on that, though I did notice that the soldier nearby had no awareness of the cryptid. But I passed all of my checks on conversation or interaction with it, but there was a certain point at which I thought any sort of like contact with the cryptid, like extended contact, would be bad for its gossamer like biology. And so I withdrew from any sort of like serious contact or connection with the bug.
Did you get the picture taken?
Yeah, I did. That's a cool little still that they had in there. I really, really like how they handled that particular scene. Like, it's probably one of my favorite scenes in the game. That and waiting for your car to be accessible in low tide.
How did you feel when you realized that a bunch of your previous hunches turned out to be spot on?
Amazing. Like a genius. Like, I invested my points into the right categories.
Because you got the two
Kim's
hunches.
Kim's going to be pissed at me.
The two hunches were that love did him in and communism killed him. And those...
I
think it was that specific order or combination of words. And it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't go any further. Once you finish it, like next week, we can maybe talk about it some more.
Yeah, I mean, the tough part about it is with our recording schedule as we normally do it, I'm probably going to be done with it in like a couple hours after we're done recording.
We could always do something short too, like another day or something.
Hey, we're not talking about Game of the Year on this podcast, but I can say that it's pretty evident what games can end up in our Game of the Year discussions whenever we do any sort of special episode on them.
Oh,
I think it's
If you want to finish it before
indicator.
We do that.
Yeah.
That's all I have to speak of this week.
And, you know, the tough part is Disco Elysium is the majority of what I played this week as well, including into this weekend.
If you want to speak on it, by all means, feel free.
I'm not sure if I encountered anything else major or dramatic outside of what we talked about last time, because the last spoiler stopping point we got to is really the penultimate scene in the game before you have the game indicate to you, or at least your environment kind of indicate that it's coming to a close, and that is the brawl or the scrap outside of the Whirling in Rags where you're staying. And so past that point, really what I think all that happens in the game is you're given an opportunity to tie up loose ends. And this is one of the few games that I feel actually very comfortable not tying up certain loose ends, because it seems like I'd be wasting time or investing effort in directions that seem to be counter to my goals in completing the case, you know, as soon as possible.
What loose ends could you tie up exactly? Because I made it a point to do as much as I could before initiating even the Ruby cutscene.
I never tied up the loose ends with the church and the, not disco heads, the drug production teens that I convinced that disco was the way and they should give up those drugs, but I didn't follow all the way through. So like, they're still freezing on the coastline in their tent while someone's doing diagnostics on a computer in the church. I wasn't able to solve that because my character is just too physically frail. There was no way to beat that check for me. And I wasn't finding that passing extra time was helping me with the benefit of that. I just rolled poorly and I ran out of opportunities to roll better. So that pretty much got locked behind a wall for me. And then I think I never dealt with the body actually. I cut the body down and I left it in the backyard of the Whirling in Rags. And then I also took Kuno's drugs and left his dad to like continue being an abusive, terrible parent.
Oh yeah, I never did Kuno's shit.
Yeah.
God, you guys sound like the worst.
I mean, my character, I tried to play as good or as like morally or ethically on the up and up as possible. I literally was the first cop type I was sorry cop, which was just like, I'm so sorry. I am not only a bad cop, but a bad person. And I owe you an apology. And then after a while, I was like, I'm tired of being sorry cop. Sorry cop fucking sucks. I'm going to be art cop and just talk about how all this is either conceptually cool or shit. And the rest of my gameplay was based more off of art cop personality background than sorry cop, because sorry cop was just too sad. You know,
when I got the prompt asking me if I wanted to be a sorry cop, I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And then I proceeded to never apologize again.
I do like how this game really prods you in certain directions with the questions or the questions it asks or the prompts that it gives. I think really do sometimes have the intent of pushing the player in one direction or another. Like, they're phrased or they're presented in a way where oftentimes, unless you're really trying to go for a very a very personally and uniquely developed character, there are questions that they ask where it's like, well, obviously no, I don't want to do this, or this, that seems insane, and so you deviate away from it.
I'm torn because the game wants you to have full control over certain instances. Like, it literally will give you a prompt, like a conversation prompt within yourself, so to speak. Anytime you fulfill the required points towards things like art cop or sad cop or superstar cop or any of the archetypes or
super
any
sad art cop
or any of the political allegiances.
Right, the political allegiances, they want you to pick something, because otherwise you feel like a completely... I felt bad any time that the option was like, I don't have an opinion on this because I'm lame and neutral. And the fact that you have to say it out loud, I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm not lame and neutral. I'm going to make a big swing for incremental liberalism.
So while the game has that approach of letting you like take agency of what you want your character to be, at the same time, it kind of does the opposite with the way that certain things will just get locked behind doors if you fail a couple RNG checks, which feels really bad. Like, I feel like there should be a way to be able to reattempt white checks. Mm-hmm. Like, the red checks are fine. Those are in the moment. Those are, like, necessary to give you some sort of
sense.
Yeah. Now, a white check, like in your case, you can have an 80% chance where it's like, you know, that seems perfectly reasonable. But as soon as I miss it and I can't because I've already got that skill maxed up, there should be some way.
And I have a really easy solution, actually. You come back the next day.
Either you come back the next day. I think there's something you can do to trigger those checks again. But even then, like, for a game that gives you a lot of agency, it feels out of theme to have it purposely lock you out of content just because
sometimes
of
off of a bad roll.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you know you're going to have to make these rolls before you make these rolls?
Yeah.
Oftentimes they allow you to choose to do the roll, so to speak. And mm-hmm. for the white checks, you can generally just leave them be and come back to them later. But that, I mean, like, choosing to come back with a better percentage is fine. The problem more is that you could have 80% or 90% and
still flop.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can't take it again unless you dedicate another level or a level point into that stat. Or there's something else, I swear, that will reset checks too.
Save scum?
There are certain items that you can pick up too. Like, there are a bunch of opportunities to get dice. And I think when you get dice, the dice always say, like, you should see what white checks have opened.
That is it. It's the dice.
Yep. The dice, I think there are also conversations and whatnot. Like, interacting with certain characters or getting a certain breakthrough on the case will reset some white checks as well. There might even be checks that clear other checks, but I can't come up with an exact example, so we might deviate away from that. But to follow up on what you're saying, Neil, like, it breaks the immersion to be like, well, I don't think I can take this chance yet, so I'm going to go like putz around and then change my clothes, maybe invest another skill point, and then try it out.
Like, it honestly makes me wonder if playing this game with a perfect character, and when I say perfect, I just mean like a character that has well-rounded stats, but everything is slightly better than just being average.
Mm-hmm.
Would not be the better, like the best experience. So you get all of the dialogue with all the different skills you have, you know, that otherwise could potentially fail checks, and you can have a chance to accomplish any of the roles that you want to do.
It feels weird to play the game without failure being a necessity in the game.
I mean,
or part of it.
I think, though, that the potential of failure could be corrected just by rebalancing the game. Like, if the game was just a bunch of coin flips, in which you had to have some mechanic to be able to try white coin flips, so to speak, as opposed to red coin flips, I think the experience wouldn't be that different in the long run, with like the exception of what apparently is one of the game's biggest flaws, at least according to the people on their subreddit, is the shivers check.
Yeah.
Which is actually where we both, I think, just did the shivers check before the last episode. And in my case, I apparently lucked out extremely well because I got a double six to pass the second shivers check. But there's a chance I could have been close to being hard locked out of progress had I not passed that shivers check.
I think that check for me as well was like, it was sort of a do or die moment. Like, there was a lot of stuff that I don't know if I would have been able to really progress through without clearing it.
And the issue I have is that check is based off of one single stat, and at least of what other people were saying, there's not like an alternative that is outside of the physique or the physical. I think that's shivers, right?
Yeah, shivers is it's like the third or fourth item on the physique table.
So you can do a lot to improve your chances at it. Like, basically any of the side quests that take place outside of that city to the east falls under like improving that opportunity or whatever. But like that feels kind of like a failing to the game, having you or giving you only one option to advance in the story, and that being out one single stat, and that stat being one that is maybe the least interesting stat, at least on your first playthrough.
I was going to say, it doesn't present itself as super interesting, but when it actually activates, it's a really, really cool idea or mechanic. Like, the shivers is almost like just this omniscient information that you can acquire at the higher levels. I pumped it up a little bit afterward, and you can walk through an area and then all of a sudden just get this like amazing overview of information that makes it so like asking questions and whatnot are redundant. And of course, I normally triggered the shivers after I had done a lot of the exploration because I didn't have the higher stat till later.
Right,
but
same.
It like answers so many questions without you ever having to ask them. You just kind of have like, you have a gut sense with it, which is interesting. I feel like it's Inland Empire, but with less like mysticism or doubt about the information you're being presented. Because Inland Empire is just like, it's esoteric enough that you never really know like, what is this information actually doing for me, or how is it concretely like helping or shaping my investigation?
You guys make me want to play this game.
I think all of the criticism we've levied at it is fair, and yet I still have had a great time playing it, and I still think like this close to the end, even after we talked about optimizing, I don't know if we phrased it exactly, but Neil and I spoke about like, as you gain more skills, it feels like you become a more generic character. I actually, now at the very end of the game, I feel like there is some sense of that, but I do believe if I were to play it again, I could deviate still in a pretty, like, I could at least go heavily in one to two other directions that would change my character dramatically. There's going to be some overlap on the skills that they're good at, but the ones that they're different at are going to create a distinct enough character and personality type. I still really, really like this game, even after all of the critique we've leveled at it.
I would give it like a 3 out of 5 when it's all said and done. But I also was maybe, I think I was maybe in a worse position than you in terms of my enjoyment leading up to the ending. I think there are some really cool stellar moments to the game, but like as someone that thinks a lot about writing and the creation of video games and the potential and the lost potential, so to speak, when I look at Disco Elysium, I see a story that probably isn't that... It's probably not even as complicated as Planescape Torment, a game made in like 1992 or... I'm going to fact check myself, but like a very old game that this absolutely draws a lot of inspiration from in regards to its delivery. And yet, I mean, I guess maybe I would feel more impressed by the game if it were delivered to us 10 years ago. And that kind of feels like a cop out to me when I'm assessing a game's quality. But like, to some degree, I do place a level of emphasis over a game's quality based upon like the time it's released. Like I probably wouldn't, I don't consider Link to the Past being any worse of a game because it doesn't have character progression or characters really at all. But if you were to give me Link to the Past on like basically Link to the Past, but like upped graphics and all that stuff, on the Switch and it were a completely new game, like I probably would say that game story is non-existent and like have it like negatively affect my perception of the game.
I mean, you are so close to actually coming up with the real example. That's Link's Awakening that came out on the Switch.
But there's a degree of nostalgia to that. When I play Link's Awakening, and not to mention, honestly, Link's Awakening's writing actually exists compared to Link to the Past, which
fair point
doesn't have really anything that interesting in the story, but I mean it gets a huge pass because that game is,
it's as old as I am.
It's Link to the Past. It's a classic. And I say that kind of ironically too, because obviously there's a level of bias I think we all have inherently to these games, because they're seen as classics and treasures, and so to speak, like inspirational pieces. But going back to Disco Elysium, what I could absolutely believe, because some people claim this to be the case, is that this game did suffer from essentially running out of funding or running out of funds towards the end of the game.
It's very funny that they have a narrative for that in the game then too.
Yes, I like absolutely. That. And so if that's true, I can absolutely see this game having been way more open, especially in its conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is now, like if I'm trying not to let that sway my opinion, like it is disappointing to me to some degree that the game certainly bottlenecks in a way that I was kind of suspecting it would last week, but only confirm that. That being said, everything in the ending was more than enough for me to like raise it from what would have been like a 2 out of 5 to a 3 out of 5.
Nice. Okay, then I'm excited to finish.
I don't know if you noticed, but I highlighted all of my points on Disco Elysium in white, so you wouldn't be able to read them as well or at all unless you highlighted them.
Yeah, if you keep highlighting them, I can read it.
Oh, you can do that if you. That's interesting. I didn't realize
it's actually easier for me because it's blue too. So.
Oh, and you're green. Interesting. Google's
Docs. Playing with our brains here. Yeah.
You guys.
What else have you said? That was like the majority of your gaming this week.
That's all I got for gaming right now. There's a lot of games that I'd like to be playing, but I have to finish Disco Elysium first. There's this one sitting on my coffee table right now, ready to be plugged into my Switch, called AI the Somnium Files, that I think you guys would really like. I just have a hunch that Neil would enjoy it. but I'm excited to play that. That's like, as soon as I finish Disco Elysium, that's getting plugged in, and that's the next thing I'm working on for now.
I am so curious as to how your experience is going to go for two reasons. The first one being that the game is obviously going to be a complete 180 in tone compared to Disco Elysium, which has, you know, a lot of like existential shit and political and economical conversation and discussions.
Yeah, DE is a heavily serious game in its subject matter, even though it's also trying to be disco as all hell.
Yeah, the two games are very absurd, but the ways in which they are absurd are polar opposites of each other.
Right.
And Disco Elysium never, like another polar point, so to speak, between these two. Disco Elysium never has a moment where it goes from absurd to serious or vice versa in a contrasting way. The absurdity is part of the seriousness, and the seriousness mm-hmm. is also part of the absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could illustrate that point better.
But I get what you're saying. They feel connected. Like the absurdity directly impacts the seriousness, and the seriousness sometimes contributes to like the more absurd things that occur. They're never like completely separate or delineated in the way that the damn panda thing in the demo of AI, the Somnium Files, like the dream logic stuff. It's great in the sense that they can do something that's just batshit and essentially play it off with the in-game explanation of like, it's your brain. Your brain's weird. Your subconscious like just does things. Sometimes it makes total connective sense. Other times it's just not related at all.
The other point too is that, and AI for that matter, the Somnium Files. Actually, I'm not sure now. It's the Somnium Files.
I'm gonna call it Ibo, the sleep buddy.
The big thing with that game, the big criticism a lot of people have is that it switches often, and it switches very dramatically, or not dramatically, but like extremely excessively between stupid potty humor and very serious implications.
Mm-hmm.
So the switch in tone is also very different from anything this writer has done before, to some extent. Like he usually handles it a little more
with a little more tact.
Yeah. But this game almost feels like a family game compared to the rest of his titles, and that leads me to the second point. I'm really curious to what another person feels about I, the Somnium Files, who hasn't played his previous games,
mm-hmm.
because they're while like the story is not related in any way, so to speak, between the Zero Escape series or trilogy, it certainly does rely on the player having some experience with those games, and that's basically all I'll say.
I really want to hear Cookie talk about Boneworks, because I've had a video playing in the background of us recording that's a bunch of the things you can do in Boneworks, and it looks like honestly the coolest VR like shooter. How do I describe it? It looks like one of those games that goes with the intent to like let you do as much as possible, and it looks like it actually capitalizes on that pretty well. Though the whole like tossing a gun in the air physics, the weight seems off, but that's fine since it's probably hard to use those controls in the first place.
It's weird, but yes, I'm very excited to get to play it and happy that it's actually working. Like I said, I only got to play it for about 10-20 minutes before I was like, I think I was in the tutorial area, and then they were like, you can go left, which is the obvious direction, or you can go right and see what's in this. Oh, by the way, you can move that crate. By the way, behind that crate, there's this little thing that you can crawl into, and now you're just out of the world.
When so you, like, I don't drop know where into I'm a supposed bottomless to be. Area.
Pretty much. So I don't know if I'm where I'm supposed to be in that game, but I started feeling a little motion sick, so I was like, okay, I've got to get my VR legs.
Mm-hmm.
But I am happy that I actually got to, after 10 hours of
downloading and installing.
Actually, downloaded, installed, had to remember how to get Steam VR to work on my computer, and then trying to like run it a couple of times, and it's like, oh no, we can't actually find the the path. No, yeah, it was like a path reading error. Mm. We can't find the path to your Oculus Quests from the PC. So I was like, you know what? Just gonna delete everything, reinstall it. And I was like, yes, it works. PC VR is pretty, and it actually upscales on my Oculus Quest. But yes, I'll have more talking about that in 2 weeks. Because I will not be here for next week. I'm not sure if I said that at the beginning of this podcast.
I don't think you recorded it. Or if that was not a
part of the recording.
It is. I don't believe it's on the recording, but Cookie's on assignment next week.
PAX.
That's right.
Higgs, yeah. And we do have one person watching, and it is Overnub. And he says, okay, Boomer.
What was okay, Boomer about?
I don't know. I didn't see when the thing came through, but
it's probably my rough analysis of Disco Elysium.
Could be. Either way. But yeah, that's we will have more information on that, and I'll also be talking a little bit, little PAX in a couple of weeks. For I will be missing next week. I'm sorry.
Apology accepted.
Well, if that is it, I don't think there's anything else on the docket.
No, I think we're all wrapped up.
If you have comments, questions, concerns, corrections, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com, or you can talk in chat, apparently.
Higgs, yeah. Call me a boomer all you want. Also, don't hesitate to watch those streams at twitch.tv/fancyrobin.tv/cookiescamilk/jfrayallday. I'm going to try and actually live stream these every Sunday at noon Central Standard Time, starting in 2 weeks, because as per mentioned, I will not be here next week.
Man, so that means we actually have to cut out or be a little more concise with our discussions, huh?
No.
What?
No.
What?
That just means that means our actual good listeners who are active community will get to see the behind the scenes things. And then once we get that Patreon, then we'll release the shortened version and the long version with all the racism.